All right, 1, 2, 3.
4, 5, 6.
Awesome. I think we're ready to do this.
Are we ready to do it?
Yeah, we're ready.
What are you doing?
Why don't you just give me a second. 3, 2, 1. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, Justin.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man.
Hi, Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hey, Garrett.
How you doing,
hey,
man?
Hey, Justin. Doing great.
Doing good.
All right, that's awesome. Been the episode of Wizarding War Talks Back. We'll see you guys next
time.
Take care,
everybody.
Bye. Woo! Oh, that's a wrap.
Episode 7.
Episode 7.
Garrett, oof. We haven't had you around in a while.
Yeah, I've been. There was a weird time rift, and a lot of things happened. Jeez.
The
futures that I've seen are terrifying.
Well, maybe you shouldn't screw around with time turners that shouldn't exist in the first place.
Well, you know, honestly, it is canon. So I was like, why don't I try it out? I might as well see what happens. And, you know, it's been good. In some futures, Tottenham won the league, and that was nice. In other futures, we lost to Manchester United at home, which did happen. But we did beat Burnley today 5-0. I'm talking about sports. What am I doing? The only way to lose our listeners.
Anyways. Everybody, this is Alex Arnson. He is the music composer for The Greater Good, Severus Snape and the Marauders, and all 7 episodes and the future episodes
all 7
of
and
The Great Wizarding War.
Yes. We are so excited to have you on the show to pick your brain.
Yes, sir.
Pick away. This is a fun episode to score.
Yes.
We tried to put as much action in there as possible for you.
It was legit. It was like scoring an action movie, even though there was not the film, which was an interesting challenge because like you're dealing with audio, which is masterfully crafted by Jordan King.
Of course. Yep.
So masterful, we had him on an episode.
Don't tell me that we had Jordan King first, because then it's going to be this weird thing.
But that we did it because it's like
best for last.
Best for last.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Okay.
We have started the rivalry.
I had to bring him on for episode 4 with the werewolf.
And I'm excited for a couple episodes to come of sound engineering and scoring is going to be very, very important for a future episode.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes, I guess, ears peeled for that. That does kind of lead me into a question. How is this different for you than scoring like a movie or a trailer where you get to watch and you sort of feel what you're seeing and then you build your score kind of organically that way? How is this different for you?
Yeah, I mean, because you don't get, by definition, I'm a film composer. So generally speaking, I'm picking up on visual cues, not necessarily audio cues, but I mean, there's a lot of times, though, where actually the cue in a film, although it's happening on screen, someone says something and then the music starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that usually is the trigger for something, not necessarily a visual, but audio. So, I mean, in a way, it's not terribly different. But, I mean, you know, you just have to be more cognizant of all the audio in the film so that when you do start and stop the music, you're doing it now with the audio. Like, the audio is even more important to be in sync with. Because sometimes with visuals, you could, I guess, do certain things with visual, with music that the sound might be going and doing its own thing and you can do your own thing. But now it's like, you kind of want to be simpatico or else it's going to be a little bit off.
Yeah. I was thinking like, you can't really fight with the sound engineering. Otherwise we're going to lose a bunch of stuff.
And this is not different with scoring to audio versus film, but obviously there's certain sections of like all the fight sequences where like I would purposely then build up the score, and then get out of the way for the big spell sound effect, right? Because I can already hear it, which is actually nice, because actually that's actually one advantage of scoring with audio already done, is that usually I don't get to hear Jordan sound effects beforehand,
or
visual effects.
I wanted to make sure that at least this episode that we got to hear, that the sound effects were at least on a certain level done.
Yeah, because especially without visual, like if I see something visually happening, I'm like, well, there's going to be an explosion, so I'm going
to
get out of
the
way.
So you have to see that and sort of do it intrinsically if you're watching something. But with this, at least you have it in the way already.
I think in general, like there is always sort of a bit of a battle between sound design and music, and so I've discovered that the best way to get around that is to literally get around it, like go in between and around the sound effects that are, especially the ones that are the most important and the most obvious, like explosions and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because or great lines from, you know, yeah, characters like James Potter or whatever.
There's almost no
stupefy.
Best line.
Such great lines.
Well, even something as small as though the I assume we can talk about the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
The mask dropping.
If you guys haven't freaking seen it yet,
you shouldn't
stop
be here.
Watching this right now. I mean, pause it, obviously come back. But go listen to the episode and see the cool visuals and the art and stuff, because everybody's put a lot of work into it.
That's true.
And I got to say, this was one of my favorite episodes to listen to. I was at work, and at work, surrounded by normal work people, I was jumping up and down at the end of the episode and screaming.
I was excited, too. Definitely.
Oh, man.
I just knew it was going to be big.
So.
How did you feel listening to it?
Oh my God. I loved it. I mean, it was mixed really well. And yeah, I mean, especially like, cause this is the first time I got to bring back the Marauders theme.
Yes.
Yes, you
so
did.
That was what was really exciting.
Yes, you
to me.
Did.
And like the whole
and
thing
it was
of
a
like
creep
everybody...
too. It was a slow creep and that, which I loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
It, it got
it,
bigger
it started,
and
yeah.
more notes with every single Marauder that came in.
Yeah. So when the first two or three come in, I kind of do just like, just the basic chord progression, but not so overt, just like kind of like it's progressing, it's slow, it's like building, and then when you come in though, then it's like then it's just crazy.
That
yeah.
was the moment.
Yeah,
like, the
yeah,
music
like
and,
yeah.
You know,
so that's why you loved it so much, is because the music was complimenting you.
Yes, of course. But also like the whole thing, you know, I think something that is just so wonderful about your scoring is it tells a story alongside everything else that we're
totally.
Doing. You know, it's like you can hear when Peter joins, when Sirius joins, when Remus joins, all of their specific sounds start to join the chords together, and that's just so
that is, I mean,
smart.
John Williams didn't invent it, but certainly he has probably popularized it more than anybody. But yeah, the leitmotif, the use of leitmotif with different characters coming in and out and using the themes is definitely something that with something like this you just have to do, or else it's just going to be sort of a wash of random music that I feel
right.
like wouldn't be as effective emotionally.
Yeah.
But even so, going back to like. Sound effects, cueing music, mm-hmm. even when it's not a huge sound where I'm getting out of the way, the one note was like when the mask drops, when you hear the mask, like mm-hmm. I didn't want to hit that too much. Or you have to hit it after the mask drops, and then a little, there's like, I think a little like a gong whoosh or something, right?
Luther's mm-hmm. mask gets knocked off. Is what
yeah.
talking
spoilers.
About.
Again, yeah. please go listen to the episode.
Spoilers.
For
yeah.
God's sakes.
But yeah, and so that's definitely... yeah, it was funny because, yeah, there was a filmmaker I was emailing back and forth, and they were just talking about how he was, like, listening back to some music I was doing for his project and how what you said about how he could just listen to the music and understand what was going on mm-hmm. without necessarily the visual, which is great. Like, not every filmmaker does think that way.
Right.
But those that do seem to notice that, you know, and I try to put a lot of effort into making sure that you could take away the film and still understand what's going on to some extent.
Yeah, I think something that you do really well is handle your silences really well, because it's like when Luther's mask comes off and we have that noise,
yeah.
there is this beat where everybody just kind of takes a moment and sort of is like, that happened.
And yeah, and you know, it's especially because it is audio only, you need to do that silence even more. Like I think silences in this podcast are even more important than in film, because in film, there's other things, you know, there are more, there's literally visual distraction. There's literally mm-hmm. the stuff yep. that's happening visually that you can sort of get away with and around. But with audio, the person listening has to, I mean, they're going to put their own picture to it, but you need to make sure the audio doesn't in a way overclog their ears
that's
with
so
information.
That's so fun to me, is that what this podcast can do is that it the audience creates their own picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is so much fun to me, is that people are envisioning these characters the way they want to. I feel the art always complements it, mm-hmm. but to me it's like the ultimate experience is wearing headphones and listening to it, like, you know, in a dark room.
Well, that was one of the reasons
envision it on your own.
We decided to do this. I mean, when this first started as like a half conversation.
Nothing to do with how we couldn't raise money again.
Well, no, I mean, okay, let's
be
honest.
Or how incredibly
like,
stressful it is
yes,
to make these things.
Like there is a whole bunch of mitigating circumstances of like money, and yeah. the fact that Warner Brothers doesn't want us to raise it, and
right.
how stressful it is to film, that we came up with this idea and we were like, well, like, is it going to be worth it? Like, yeah, we can write it, but like, what's the point unless we can tell the story?
Yeah.
And I think the thing that really sold at least me on it was in audio, because I love audiobooks and I love podcasts, mm-hmm. in that medium, the play is happening inside of your head, you
That's
know,
right.
and it's like, it's your characters, it's your setting. And if you can really get into it and really buy into what's going on, which your score just helps us do in spades, it's a fun thing. And there's things inside your head that you will never see on screen ever, because
right.
they're yours.
Yeah, I mean, even with the biggest budgets, they sometimes still have problems putting everything on screen. So, mm-hmm. but you can put anything on screen in your head, you know. So
yeah.
That's right. That's kind of interesting.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you remember how we got started together as a composer to director?
Yes.
How did that happen?
That happened because I believe I put posters up at Columbia College.
That's right. That's how proactive this dude is.
Yes.
I just find this card. I was like, oh, it's a cool card. And I look him up and I'm like, this dude's like 17 years old.
So wait a second.
But then he like sheds some of his work and I was just like, this 17-year-old is a genius. So yeah, we'll work together.
You put... How did you get a card? You put posters up first.
Well, there's a bulletin board in my school.
Okay.
And they allowed anybody who wanted to offer their services to put it up there.
Right.
Musical so, services. That was a weird twitch.
The eye twitch was for you only. I was going to let it go, but yeah. Services in a college poster, like, where am I supposed to go with that?
Anywhere except where you're thinking.
Right. You know, free house maintenance is what I needed in college most. But so you would go to this school.
No, I never actually went to the school.
How did you get your posters up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I thought you just like dropped it off.
Yeah, so funny story. So actually, this started, I think it was like either my junior or high school year, senior high school year. My dad suggested to me, oh, if you want to score films, like you should try to score some like student college filmmaker films. Mm-hmm. And one of his clients was a teacher at Columbia College.
Which one?
I can't remember the name now. Now I'd have to.
You don't even know this story. You're getting new information.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I believe this teacher was the person who then, like, I sent him the flyers or whatever, and he was the one who put up the flyers everywhere.
So this teacher liked you so much that on their off time, they walked around their campus and taped things to walls and bulletin boards.
Supposedly, yes. Dude, I mean, it worked.
That's some real talent right there.
Yeah, it did work.
I couldn't get teachers to grade my papers.
It did work.
But it is interesting, though, because, I mean, I still do occasionally score student films or, like, master's thesis films. And, I mean, there's always still a hunger for original music. I mean, people, you know, they use temp music and they use famous scores, but they want things scored, you know, original music.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Snape and the Marauder score is our score. Nobody else has it.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it one of the reasons why it's so special is that people can go and look up the soundtrack and listen to it over and over again and associate it with our movie.
Oh,
Same way with Harry Potter and its notes of Hedwig's
mm-hmm.
theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have that for Snape has a theme and the mm-hmm. Marauders have a theme, and mm-hmm. that's just amazing.
I think that's great that you still do student films and thesis films and stuff. Because, I mean, you're obviously successful. Like we were talking about before about this freaking Billy Talent awesome episodic thing that you're scoring.
Yeah, no, it's a cool project.
So, like, you're obviously working, but the fact that you go back and do these projects, I think, is just a great... Like, do you do that to keep your muscle working? Like, why do you think you keep going back to do student films or thesis films or, you know, these lower-paying gigs?
You know, just continuing to work with new talent, new passionate filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think a career in the arts, at least from my trajectory standpoint, is a very long-term career that I'd like to try to cultivate. It's not a 20-year career. It's not a 30. It's a lifetime. I want to go Bernard Herrmann. I want to finish a score, go home and die.
Yeah,
that's it. Like my last score, I finished my score. I don't want like a Mozart Requiem situation where I've finished half a score. Right? Yeah, that would be horrible. But no, like he finished. I don't know what the score was, but he finished a score, went home, went to his hotel or something, died. That's it.
Someone
that's
look
why
this
I
up
go
and
out.
Send that score to Alex so he can keep it.
So that's my long view of the whole thing. Like I don't plan on retiring, so I want to try to continue to meet and work with as many new people as possible.
John Williams right now. Everyone was like, he went to the hospital for something, got sick, and he's like in his mid-90s when he was working on the final Star Wars film, and everyone's like, oh my God, please don't die. And he's just like, I'm not going to die. I got to finish the score.
Yeah.
He's like, I can wait. All right. Yeah. Death, give me one moment. I'm not quite
but
finished.
But then I scored your thesis film.
You scored two. When I did my thesis film, it was for
holiday,
but technically that was thesis two. My school had trimesters and, they basically said you need to get one film done for your final year. And I got holiday done in one trimester.
Now give me a log line for holiday real quick. Jack Black comedy rom-com.
No, it was a horror. It was a horror, and what was the thing? I forget. I have the poster.
Jack Black and Jude Law trade places. One's from England, one's from the United States. Will they find holiday love this summer?
Something like that. But it was just basically a story about how this family was coming home for Thanksgiving, and none of them liked each other, especially the brother and the sister. And the sister was really nasty and kind of evil. And it's kind of sets you on a path of where you think the brother ran off and then starts murdering everybody. Focusing on her, trying to kill her.
Wow, this is very dark.
Yeah.
Keep going. So what was your like? Give me like.
I can't think of it right now.
This Thanksgiving family comes home.
Whatever.
For good.
I scored it. I was at Berkeley on my MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
With headphones and the whole nine yards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, he did that one first, and then I finished that one in one trimester, and I was like, I can do more. So we did Kiss,
so
which was the
first movie was a horror movie.
Yeah, my first college film.
This is the guy.
It's not my first film
this
ever.
This is the guy. So we did Powerless, which Alex also scored Powerless because he's just so good. We did Powerless, which is like a horror short. Now I'm so totally good. Diverging. This is going to be like a 9-hour podcast. Sorry.
We're only 17 minutes in.
Yeah, well, put your seatbelts on, folks. So he goes to work on this horror movie short, and he's like, I got to do my research. I'm telling you, he's like, I got to do my research. I got to do all this stuff. I don't know horror movies at all. So he watched like Hereditary, The Witch. Like, did you ever watch The Witch?
Oh, yeah, I watched The Witch.
You did? Okay. Yeah. So all this horror movie research, because I love, my fiance and I love horror movies. So I was like, yeah, do your thing. Like, do your research. You're telling me this whole time the first college movie that you did was a horror movie?
It was a bad horror movie.
All horror movies can be bad.
No, it was like there wasn't anything scary about it. There was like nothing scary in that film.
I mean, the log line was pretty scary.
I mean, like, the idea sounds creepy, but like, just
in execution, it was, you know, it was shot like a single camera episode. I got Dawson's Creek
thing. I was happy because I got one scare out of that.
Okay.
And like one scream when I screened it for college.
Did the opening credits?
Hey. It was. it was, oh my God, it's starting. Ugh.
You're like, yay.
I was lying. It was the end credits. Yay, it's over.
Oh, it's probably really good. I'm sure
send it to you.
Internet, dig up. I'm sure this is online somewhere.
I'm sure at least one of the fans will find it.
Yeah. This is your power.
But anyways, he did Holiday, and then we did Kiss, and that one was much better. It was a romance,
of course.
I just remember like we were finishing up that scoring session. We were up to like 2 or 3 in the morning to like finishing up the last scene.
Oh my God! Yeah, I rescored the whole last scene with you in the room. And actually, it was when the whole studio was facing this direction.
Yeah, it was the other side.
Wow!
And that was 2010.
Yes.
So you guys,
9 years. We've known each other almost
a decade.
No, more than 10 years.
Over a decade. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've worked together this whole time.
Every film I've made, he's scored.
So how has your relationship kind of grown and changed? Obviously, your MacBook is upgraded to whatever this behemoth is behind you.
It's the Darth Vader trash can.
Yeah. It really.
For now, I actually just got the greeting and email. The new Mac Pro is coming out on the 10th.
Wow.
He's getting it
eventually.
That's your tower.
Yeah, the trash can.
Jeez, Louise, you guys,
the Darth Vader.
Apple products
are the best.
Okay,
they're fabulous.
Get back to my very pointed question, please.
they're fabulous, except that I was replacing my iMac in Studio B, and when I opened it up this morning and I pressed the on button.
He gave it to his intern.
Oh yeah, so I forget you have an intern. He's got an intern, folks.
But anyways,
assistant. But
this isn't when I know I've made.
Well,
it.
No, I mean, my assistant is getting more busy for me, so I'm literally having to hand off more additional music for her to do. She was an intern, now she's an assistant, and I have another intern.
That's what I want to talk about, right? Is, I mean, your career is growing so much that you're now giving other people projects.
Yeah,
which is great.
Which is weird because I also do additional music for other composers, so it's like this bizarre ecosystem where I do music for I do additional music for a couple composers that do just tons of feature films every year. Like, literally, they scored 32 feature films this year.
Jeez Louise.
So they have a crew of like me and like 4 or 5 other people. I'm like the fifth or sixth person on the list, but like it's like this ragtag band of people that we all score these films. And then there's this other guy that I've recently started working for this year, last 6 months, that he actually does children's music.
Oh,
like
cool.
kid shows. And it's made me.
You said that's a huge challenge.
It is. I mean, I describe it as musical Tourette's, because every 2.5 seconds there is a character doing something, and you have to react to everything and everyone. And everyone has a theme, and everyone has an instrument. I mean, it's like Severin Snape and the Marauders on steroids. I mean, everything, every time, it'd be like every cue is broken up into like 15 smaller cues, and each section is like 2 seconds of this, and you immediately have to switch to another thing.
So you're saying as our project has been dwarfed by a children's show.
Actually, thank God for me working on that, because it actually is, I think, how I was able to score episode 7 so well, because I tempo mapped everything. That's why everything was hitting so perfectly and seamlessly, because I've gotten so well trained now for tempo mapping before I even write a note of music that you have to do, like scoring that trailer you watched earlier.
Yeah. I watched the trailer.
Same thing. Like, I used to not like scoring trailers because it felt very much like, well, you just have to start and you have to stop. You have to start and you have to stop, right?
Right.
Well, that's literally what I do now all the time. So I'm just used to it. It's not even a thing. It's like, I don't write music without tempo mapping a cue anymore. I used to kind of write music, and as I went along, oh, I guess I need to like figure out how to like, you know, like.
So it's a matter of efficiency. This is a business.
Explain this tempo mapping to me, because I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so like, you know, like obviously like a slower tempo, like 80 BPM, like the or like, you know, like the action scenes in episode 7 were probably like 160 BPM, like dun 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 dun.
Okay,
right?
Got it.
Like faster and slower. Mm-hmm. And so basically, in order to actually hit things in film with frames, you know, you're trying to hit certain frames versus in this case, you're hitting, I guess, sort of audio moments, right? So obviously right. In a podcast, it's a different situation, but same concept. I mean,
you're hitting moments,
you know, usually in film, there's a little burned in time code that tells you up to the frame and there's mm-hmm. 24 frames or 23 point, whatever frames per second in film.
Oh, I see.
And so, you know, the human eye actually, I never really worked this way, but the human eye can actually basically, you can be off by 2 or 3 frames and the human eye won't really notice it. So you can kind of get away with being quote unquote off a frame. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to really practice that as a general thing. So I'm just like, yeah. I'm going to hit it exactly where it needs to be hit.
I feel like the subconscious would notice.
Yeah, I just I'd rather.
And honestly, sometimes it makes for better music because when, and I don't mean scoring, I mean like music. Cause,
oh, this is so interesting. this is not how my brain works and I like this.
But I remember that Dave Grohl on Foo Fighters with one of his albums maybe 5 or 6 years ago, he said, I'm going to do this entirely analog because I don't like that we can digitally, mathematically hit every beat. I want to figure it out, and then the tiny imperfections will change the quality of the music in a way that he believes is much better. And I agree with him.
Oh yeah, and there are certain elements, like there are certain things that I don't like to quantize. Like if there's just sort of like, if I'm just like doing like kind of a glissando, like a piano roll, I then will leave that unquantized so it's not perfect, because you need to have that kind of, because that's what a real musician would sound like. It wouldn't be clunk 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 clunk, it'd be bring, you know. Mm. And so there's certain things you leave alone, you just leave it as it's supposed to be. But yeah, so I mean, in order to score that kind of stuff, which is literally, the guy told me when I first started working with him, this is the hardest kind of music to score, period. Like, if you can do this, you can do anything. So
there you go.
What a great
It's
gig.
Literally weight training for film scoring. So because I then go and I score things that don't have as many complicated tempo maps, and it takes me half the time now.
And this guy, like, yeah, with his weight training regimen, you watch him on Instagram.
Oh, also, he's got this is down. The strongest person I know, by the way.
I've had to back off of it. I've just been working so much. I've had to try to like shorten my workouts. But
he's only got a 6-pack instead of his 8-pack. That's too bad. I feel bad for you. Those other two abs, what are they doing there on break?
They're very lonely. They're very sad.
So if you were going to give, I mean, since we've kind of gotten into this, like,
into the weeds.
If you could go back to yourself when you first started scoring music with the knowledge you have right now, what advice, if you could give yourself one piece of advice, would you give yourself back then?
Creatively or the business part, or like what aspect? Or
the business part, because everybody can get better at their craft without succeeding in the business.
All right, answer True. The business part for him and answer the creative part for me.
Yeah, I mean, because with the business part, and I've continued to sort of develop it, but I think, I don't know. What would I tell myself when I first started?
This is what happens when you don't prep your guests with the questions you're going to ask them. You just do it right out. And so
that's
you
how
can
we
think,
do it.
And we'll just vamp while you think.
No, hey, I'm used to improvisation, so it's all good.
That's true.
When it comes to dealing with clients who are interested in your talents but not necessarily interested in proper compensation, how do you prepare for that ahead of time?
Oh,
you're framing the same question in a different way.
Yeah, no, but that actually is something that I could have told I would love to have told myself when I first started, because it probably would have given me a lot less headaches. I used to be based on kind of research that I had done initially, like when I was in college, that supposedly you should like film scoring budget is some percentage of the film. And
it's like 2%, right?
Yeah, and that might still be true to some extent, but again, it fluctuates, and it's not really something you can hold on to.
Sure.
And
it depends
this
on
level,
the composer. It depends on, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe 10 or 20 years from now, that would be back to what would actually make sense, or, you know, those things will just be handled by agents and all sorts of other crazy things that go on. But in terms of if you are a freelance film composer, for me, what's actually made my life a lot easier is I basically just go off of different sort of scale rates of, like, you know, amount of money per minute of music. And that weirdly has made it so much easier to negotiate and talk to filmmakers.
Oh, yeah.
Because in a weird way,
you just throw them the number and they go, okay.
And that's
or
what I would have.
Can you do a little less?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
because,
then you say yes or no.
Yeah. Because all of a sudden they can, because there's a couple of things. I mean, obviously, anybody can then fudge the numbers if you're doing a percentage. So like that also, that's true. That, you know, that also makes it rather, yeah, you know,
you're gonna get that's a piece of advice for your younger self is people will fudge the numbers.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you get 1 point off the back end. What does that mean?
Oh my God. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it makes it a lot easier when then all of a sudden you give them a rate. Like for instance, what I tell the easiest way for me to explain it is, well, the rate I would ask for a piano only score is going to be dramatically different than a fully orchestral score, just because there are so many,
there's so many more instruments.
And people get that. And so I think that's the easiest thing, is I would have told myself, like, stop trying to, you know, square peg in a round hole. Like, this is not working. Like, because all of a sudden everybody would always ask me rate, and I'm like, it's not a rate, it's this. And so, you know, I think it was just like my dull-headedness to think that like I could sort of shift it to what I had been told you're supposed to do,
well,
and it just doesn't work that way.
It's an experience thing, and that I think is a great piece of advice, is the way I was told it was supposed to be, it doesn't work that way, because it works different for everybody. And
yeah, there's no rules.
I think through your experience, it sounds like you've learned to kind of adapt and improv with what's going on, even business related, which is smart.
And creativity wise, weirdly enough, the very thing that I thought would, we're talking about the tempo map issue, I actually didn't really like to do the whole changing tempo maps and all sorts of stuff, because I thought it would kind of like restrict me and make me too robotic and too this or that, and cause, you know, too much writer's block or something. I don't really believe in writer's block anymore. Also, earlier this year, I read the book The War of Art, which totally changed my philosophy about the creative lifestyle. Like, I just look at it as it's by Stephen Pressfield. It's amazing. I mean, basically, like, there's no other like traditional job where you go to work and you're not expected to get a certain amount of product finished by the end of the day, right? It's like there's always like this artsy fartsy thing of like, oh well, I don't feel like it, I don't, you know. No, you are a professional artist.
It's nonsense.
It's non-negotiable. You roll up your sleeves, you go to work, you have to produce whatever it is, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 2 minutes of music a day, whatever it might be that day needs.
That's just the difference between discipline and motivation.
Waiting
you hear a lot of people like, you're
waiting
not getting
for inspiration
what, waiting for inspiration, you're not getting enough done because you're not motivated. And it's the truth is, it's F motivation. Discipline yourself
to do it.
To do it.
I heard the way that I've heard this idea that I really liked is the guy, Sam Jones from Off Camera, was talking about this, and he goes, you know, anybody can take a good picture, right? But he's like, a professional photographer is like, can you take a good picture this Thursday?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh,
yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you can't, you're right, you can't wait around for inspiration to strike. It's like, it's, you just gotta, motivation comes after work begins.
Yeah.
And like, there's a study, actually, I don't know what the study was, but, or it was an example of a professor who basically had half of his students, they're required to only have to take one photo the whole year, but their entire grade is based on that one photo, versus the other half basically could take as many photos as they wanted. And as it turned out, that one great photo that was riding on everything, the people that only had to do one photo, that one photo was relatively mediocre, whereas the people that had to do like 1,000 photos, they had far more great photos because they had more practice. They were just doing it more. They were just getting better at it. They're getting more reps. And so, I mean, with the tempo map thing, I don't get writer's block anymore, really, because also what happens is, say it's even a crazy, like a longer cue, like a 3 minute cue. Like, again, by tempo mapping it, you break it down into like kind of like chunks of things you're hitting. Say I don't know how to start the cue. I don't know what the music is at the beginning. I have no idea for some reason. I don't know why, but I don't. Especially early on in a score where I'm not, I don't have a lot of themes yet. But I know what to do in the middle. That 30 seconds from this point to this point, I know exactly what to do. Or as simple as, oh, that has to have a cymbal crash. It has to have a timpani roll.
Yeah.
That's going to, I have to put that in no matter what. So let's just put it in now. Then it just
starts.
That's
when it starts.
And all
to
of
go.
A sudden, then you have, now, because also the benefit of that is now you know where you're coming from and where you're going out of. You know, now you actually know where you're building.
Right.
So if you finish the end of the cue, you know, okay, you should probably have less energy or more energy based on the fact that if it's the end, usually might be more or less energy depending on how it's ending. But yeah, it gives you context. And so I used to definitely work in a more chronological order. Now it's whatever.
I've started doing the same thing.
Sometimes it'll be at the very beginning, but it just opens up the possibilities.
It's a nice thing about interesting. It's not like building a house. You don't have to start with the foundation and build up. You could start with the roof.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, I think it's interesting because breaking down scripts for me now has become this thing of like, what part of this do I really enjoy? Like, what part of the script is jumping out at me? Like, oh, that's cool. I like that. jump into that and I'll kind of dig around in that for a while and find some choices out of it. And just by starting, it's like other things start to kind of take shape. And see how this is now turned blue? You see how this is all over? Because it's a Mac product. Oh, well, everybody's stealing your password,
saver, buddy.
Right now. Here we go.
It's called a screensaver.
Yeah, after 30 minutes, I do.
I'm sorry, my computer doesn't have a screensaver. It's got a sleep mode that I turned off. So my computer never sleeps.
So your screen basically has a burned-in picture of your headshot.
Technically,
that's what you keep
my screen is broken at the moment.
Oh, okay.
But I broke
But Macs are terrible.
Listen, this isn't a thing where we do the thing where I'm wrong and you're right. It's just an opinion, but mine's right.
Yeah, the thing that I was saying earlier was I was opening this new iMac that I'm replacing, this 2011 iMac. Mm-hmm. It's like on its last leg. I had to replace its graphic card and the whole nine yards, but I have this new one. And as I was trying to turn it on, it won't turn on.
The new one won't?
Yeah, it's black screen. I'm returning it. I have to return it and get a new one. But like, I turned it on, and literally I can just hear a voiceover is starting to say, you know, it's like, would you like English or would you like Espanol?
Literally, because it's waiting for you.
Because it's trying to boot your system.
It doesn't
know
what to do. Like, it's on, but the screen won't turn on. It's like, I am not going to start my relationship with this computer going to tech support. No,
Did you open it and it was like, hello, Alex. It's been so long since I've seen you.
I'm sorry, Alex. I cannot do that. I can't do that.
Why don't
Dave?
I dream, Alex?
why are you putting me back, Alex?
Don't put me in the box.
My life was so short.
Don't send me back. No, I promise.
I'll be good. I'll turn on this time.
Yes, and we've lost our minds.
So let's talk
about... Did that answer the creative part and the business part?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. Did it answer it?
No, I
feel satisfied, yeah.
That's good.
So let's get to our story.
Yes.
Let's talk about what's going on in this episode.
What is going on in this episode?
Basically, I just like speculating on what you guys think is going on in the characters' minds whenever...
This is an unfair question to ask me because we just met for coffee the other day, and all we did was talk about what's going on in the characters' minds.
Yeah, for the next episodes, but not this episode.
All right, fair.
And I love to hear actors' motivations for what they were thinking when they said the lines that they said.
Okay.
And also, I'd love to hear, you know, what do you think was going on in their heads, and where do you think it's headed? Because you don't have all the scripts.
That's true. No. Alex is not...
It's kind of fun. Like, I almost am like the audience. It's like, yeah, I'm scoring this one, but I don't know what, like, how the episode ended. Right. I'm like, I don't know exactly what they're doing.
That is so wild because I know where everything's going, which is an unfair advantage, but you are building a story with us and you don't have all the pieces.
Yeah. Which I don't know if it's a good or bad thing, but I mean, you know, obviously.
That's good because I want the score to be on par with the audience.
Yeah, like, I don't want to. I'm afraid I'll hint at something if I know it, you know?
Exactly. I don't want to hint that at you.
Well, let's say, I mean, and this is not the traditional way to do it. Like, if you have someone scoring a film, they usually have the whole film, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, here we go, I know what's happening.
Yeah, it's the whole film, but this is a series.
This is true.
Yeah.
But even then, you usually have, like, a storyboarded out full series for at least that season, and the composer
I mean, we had the very basic beats.
That's true.
And Alex, I might have told you at some point what the basic beats are. Who knows if you remember? Let's not talk about them because I don't want to
spoilers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was thinking, it's like, I think you did mention a couple of things, and I'm like, I don't want to say it.
Yeah.
That's fair.
All right. So, what do you think was the reasoning that James Potter decided to take back the Marauder's Map?
Well, at this point...
Because he didn't take it back for plot reasons.
No, he did not take it back for plot reasons.
No.
He took it back because his life has literally been turned upside down, right? He just found out his parents are dying. Hmm. All of his friends have scattered to the wind. He doesn't trust Peter anymore. He doesn't know where Remus is. He doesn't know what to say to Sirius because he feels like it's his fault.
Yeah.
So the Marauder's Map, for him, is this big security blanket. It's the last thing where everything made sense, right? Literally, it's a map of the last part of his life. So for me, James goes back to Hogwarts to reconnect. It's like after I graduated high school, I left and I moved away to college. And the first summer I came back, one of the first things I did was drive to my old high school and park. And it was closed. And I just kind of walked around and I looked at the old buildings.
I've done that before.
And everybody does that, I think. I think it's a pretty universal thing because it's like you want a touchstone with who you were if you're not sure where you're going.
Sure.
And for James, that touchstone is Hogwarts. I mean, and it's the Marauder's Map. It was his parents and it was his friends and all of that is gone or different. So it's like you got to go back and you got to kind of refigure it out. So that's why I think he goes back and picks up the Marauder's Map and takes it from Filch.
Right on. Any thoughts on that, Alex?
I feel like he...
You got it.
About his all right, so I got. Yeah, I mean, man, that was very thorough.
I got one for you, Alex. Like, you definitely had some very visceral scoring with the Death Eaters.
Yes.
In this, even had some choir in there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my god, this is awesome. So you also had a theme. So you had a theme for the Death Eaters, and you had a theme for Luther.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to know, like, where your reasoning was as to why you choose what notes you choose for Luther. And for this, for Luther, and for this particular scene with the Death Eaters, before it turns into the Marauders theme.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I wanted to establish obviously them as the bad guys, and certainly, you know, the kind of the rhythmic kind of very visceral sort of darker kind of vibe. I also wanted to have some level of contrast, so when you are dealing with because there's a period where obviously they're not fighting each other, and that those parts are a little more placid, a little more sort of atmospheric. And so I definitely wanted, because part of what you had sort of warned me about this episode was that it was going to be taking place geographically in different locations. And I, when you first told me that, I was like, I don't really know what does he mean by that. Like, are they literally in different countries? Like what is happening? But obviously, once I started listening to it and figuring out what was going on, it was more just geographically within the town and everything. Like, they're mm-hmm. in different places trying to get to each other, mm-hmm. and like, you know, so that is part of it. Like, that is, it's like setting up these different beats for when each one is talking, the music should shift similar to the sound design around the area.
I think you and Jordan working together on this one nailed that.
Yeah.
Because you really can tell where everybody is, like geographically in that town. And it just lends a lot to the story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think obviously the sound effects are going to definitely do the heavy lifting with literally where are they. You know, obviously you can hear like the crickets and rustling of certain things when they're further sure. away from the town, and, you know, the background sound. You can hear the fighting still, which is interesting. But I don't, since you're closer to the people that aren't in the fight yet, like, I don't want that necessarily. I want, you know, it's also just part of like contrast, like anything else. Like, you can't have the high without the low, so you want to have the moments when people are further away from the action, like, that shouldn't be as intense. And obviously then, of course, as the episode goes on, it gets more and more intense mm-hmm. and more visceral. And I think part of it is, I think to some extent the Death Eaters are basically getting an inheritance from Snape's music, which is very visceral. So I think that's part of how it folds into itself, because obviously there's not necessarily, outside of Luther, there's not like tons of time to develop every single character
sure.
in this type of a scenario. Mm-hmm. And so I think on some level it's almost like Snape's music is getting like lowered onto the body of the Death Eaters, like sort of like the, you know, that's around cool. that,
yeah.
sort of, in a way.
It's connecting to it. Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, you know, where they're very visceral and it's dark and it's scary and powerful. And then obviously the Marauders are a little more light and heroic. And then obviously then there's just all the stuff in between, which is the more atmospheric little bits and pieces that come along with it.
Totally.
You know, you said that the sound design, Jordan's sound engineering does most of the heavy lifting for like geographically where they are and like how they're getting there. And I would say probably the score does most of the emotional heavy lifting.
Yeah. And that's always, yeah. I mean, that's always the question of like, when do you need to effectively use the sound design versus the music? Like, because each one provides, generally speaking, relatively dramatic different uses.
Well, explain to me now, because in this scene, Sirius runs in first.
Yes.
Remus and Peter follow.
They're right behind him.
And so how did you use your score? Like, how were you using the score at that point to kind of help tell the story? Like, what did you think was going through Remus's head?
Yeah.
Because he,
you know, I think, because yeah. I think during that cue, it's more chill, but then near the end of it, it starts to kind of build up, and then it cuts to some of the, I think the Aurors and the Death Eaters fighting each other.
Yep.
And so then that kind of takes back to the Death Eaters in a way. You know, and sometimes, again, I can't hit everything all the time. It's not like every single second is mathematically mapped out to perfection, but I try
I don't want it to be.
Yeah. I don't want it to be too crazy.
I'd rather be focusing thematically, because you did have the Death Eaters, and then you had like, to me, it was like, I heard Death Eater music, and then I heard music of a fight.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. it was a fight. And then you didn't have specific music for the Longbottoms when they showed up, which was good. I was like, they're part of a larger group, which is the fight. Order of the
yeah.
Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the fight itself. But then once Sirius Black comes in, it changes.
Yes.
But
yeah, that was so cool.
And it's subtle. And then Remus comes in and it gets a little bit more. And then James comes in and it's full on Marauders theme.
Yes.
That's
yes,
what
yes.
made it so much fun.
Yes.
What made it so good and just got my heart palpitating and was just like, this is what the fans are going to love. Because I remember early comments saying, why would you separate the Marauders? They would never do that. I'm like, okay, so they're not human beings who get mad at each other?
Yeah.
Whatever. But don't worry about it, because I'm going to bring them back together and it's going to be great.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
going to love how they come back yeah. together.
And it's because of the time apart that makes it so great when they're back
right.
together.
Yeah.
I mean, that again
it's a payoff.
Is your score doing the heavy lifting of the emotional payoff.
Yeah.
Right?
Because I was, I mean, because as you, regardless, like, obviously we're all fans of art and media and stuff, regardless of the fact that we also create it. So it's like, I just, as a viewer, was like, man, they are all in different places, but like, that's not a bad thing. That's just part of, you know, narrative plot. Like, you can't have
their arc.
You can't, yeah. I mean, like, you have
to. There has
to
be a level of conflict. They can't just be like, oh, well, what do we do now? Plot.
The four of us together always. What are we going to do together always?
No,
the four
I like
of us.
That.
Yeah,
I
we're
like
going to argue
a
bit.
Beat.
Yeah, that's not, it's not as strong as them as make it separating them.
Yeah, because, yeah, you can then also develop them as unique individuals rather
that's
than
right.
just being the group, which they, basically that's all they were in the film.
Can
they
you
were
imagine
group,
they
basically.
Stay together and they just decide to accompany Peter Pettigrew to meet his mom?
Yeah.
Have Turkish delights for all of you.
We're just gonna wait over in the corner. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
yeah. And they're all there when Seriously, they find out that yeah. James's parents are gonna die. It's like,
oh god.
They, like, it'd be like this. It'd be this everly more depressing montage of yeah. events.
In my head, I picture James like sitting on the couch, and then it just like camera shift to your left, and the three of them are just like awkwardly like,
oh no.
Yeah, someone passes a tissue. It's like,
yeah. Sorry, mate. Wow.
This is awkward. Your parents are going to die soon.
Yeah.
Peter, what?
Shut up. did you have anything to eat? Sorry to interrupt.
Some crumpets.
Sorry, I'm going to die, but I'm hungry.
We haven't eaten all day. And, yeah. You know how it is.
So what do you think is like Sirius wants to get everyone back together? That's what he's been trying to do the whole time. But
yeah.
What is his reasoning? Like, what is he afraid of if he doesn't get them back together in the group the way he's used to? Like, he wants them to get back together, and if he does, then he'll feel better. But let's put in a what if they didn't, like, what's his thought process on how he would possibly move forward? And why does that scare him?
I answered this first. Do you want to answer first?
Yeah, yeah. I think I have an idea. I mean, I think you actually even mentioned it. I think he has a dialogue line in episode 7 where he's like, that's why I stopped being a part of the Black family. And like, I think that in a way, like, the Marauders are yeah. his family. And so literally, it would literally be like the dissolution of his family if they're not all together.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, that would be, that's a terrible feel that I think a lot of people can relate to also. Mm-hmm. It's not like
sure.
a unique fear per se.
I think Sirius is one of my favorite arcs for us because the Sirius we meet knows in the books, mm-hmm. knows solitude really well. Like,
yeah.
he has a flying motorcycle, which is the most isolating way to fucking go anywhere. Oh, man, I didn't curse this whole time. Sorry, Grandma. So we meet this guy who's, like, been to prison, right? His solitude is his best friend,
sure.
you know? And the series that we meet in our series is not that way. He mm-hmm. is reliant on this group, being a part of this awesome
yeah.
group. And for me, this arc is Sirius losing that and understanding how to be by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that arc. And I think that's why he wants everybody to get back together, because he doesn't want to be lonely.
Right.
He literally has no one else. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
Because we can see that the Order of the Phoenix doesn't
sure.
want trust him yet. And we can also see that he doesn't have family. James and his parents and the rest of the Marauders, that's it for
yeah.
him.
We'll be going a little bit into that with episode 8. Like, we don't even know that he's not... That the order is a little bit skittish of him until episode 8. But
someone should
that's
stop
not really
spoiling
a spoiler.
The episode.
That's not really a spoiler,
maybe
though.
Should...
A Black is going to join the order. I think every member would be like, are you sure? Because every other member of his family are some of the deadliest people on Earth.
Yeah.
So,
word. So spoiler alert. You guys should listen to episode 8 before listening to this. We exist on the internet. All time is happening right now. So if you haven't listened to episode 8 yet, guys, go listen to it, okay? Because we're gonna spoil.
Yeah, this is like Dark. This is like the Netflix series Dark. Like, everything has already happened, actually.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah, sorry.
God. Yeah. Leanna loves that one.
It's my favorite show.
Is it
right
the
now.
German one? My
parents
yeah.
don't
yeah,
watch it. It's so good. And now
yeah,
they're taking the whole other thing.
Extra
for season
dark.
3. Yeah,
ultra
it's gonna get
dark.
Even crazier. But yeah.
Darker.
Darkest.
Well, actually, I'm sorry. That was to season 2. Season 3 is Darkest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if they do a season 4...
Darkerest. Well,
yes.
Yay.
Yeah. So, James has seen Snape for the first time since the fight in Severus Snape and the Marauders.
I am so happy, finally. Dude,
yeah.
we... Okay. 7 episodes, people.
Yeah.
Took me 7 episodes to get this out of Justin. I wanted them to fight. Immediately, like when we were first talking about this story,
yeah,
we were like, all right, cool. So this is kind of the basic idea. Like, all right, I like it. And I was like, so the first episode, like, James kicks Snape's butt, right? And you're like,
that has been the longest fight you and I have had of like, James would totally beat Snape. I'm like, no, he really wouldn't.
But you know what?
James would totally fight Snape right now. I'm like, I don't want that to happen. I disagree.
Agree. And I understand that you disagree, but one of us has to be correct.
Well,
but no, this was a big, and I'm so glad that you waited, because this meeting of the minds,
it's the satisfaction of the moment. It is, and true. Even then, it's a short fight.
It is a short fight,
and the fight is basically, it's not a proper fight.
One of my favorite things about the fight is it's almost a rehashing of the fight in Snape and the Marauders. Similar things happen thematically in the fight.
Yeah, can't take a hit. He's dodging spells,
right?
Yeah.
But I love the way that it ends, and I love kind of what it's alluding to, because I think after I listened to it, I felt frustrated for James, because it's like right there.
Yeah, see, if I satisfy his fight with Snape early on, or even in the middle, then it's his arc is, at least a huge part of his arc is over.
Yeah, agreed.
And that can't happen until the penultimate episode.
Yeah, it can't happen until the climax of the show. Climax for sure. Show, yeah.
Well, I did like how the fight did mirror aspects of the film, where you have Snape basically going to go for the kill, but this time out of, I think, hubris and just kind of like continuing to pontificate upon that, James basically just knocks him back. Yeah.
He that was our compromise.
Yeah.
He's just like, James can be Snape. I'm like, Snape can't be James. Yeah. Snape can't win. Snape can't lose. Snape can't win. That was the back and forth.
Stalemate, basically. So he's, but like,
yeah. And that's where we've been compromising. Like, let's make them a stalemate. So,
right.
But it's good though, because like James learned though, like in a way, like James, like, or it certainly improved, didn't necessarily learn, but like certainly was more ready for the situation.
He's a little bit more ready, but he rushes in.
Oh yeah.
Which he should have done.
Yeah. True. I love it, because this fight is a great, like, middle fight. Like, things have been learned by both sides.
Yes.
They're both a little more ruthless and fighting a little bit different. But James falls into the same trap that Snape fell into in the movie.
Right.
Is that he can't just take the win and be the guy.
Well, James can't take a step back.
Yeah. James has to be in the forefront of, like, in his face and, like, about what's going on. And he loses his quarry. And then he realizes that Lily is in danger.
Right.
At the end of this. And I think this is a big wake-up call for James, because he almost gets what he wants. He almost gets exactly what he wants.
Which is what you should never do in a story unless you want it to end. Unless you want it to end on a low note.
That's true. He almost gets exactly what he wants. And in almost getting it, he realizes that the thing he holds most dear is in danger, and he had no idea.
Right.
So this for him, I think, is just a seismic shift in his priorities.
Sure.
Is when Snape leaves and tells him that St. Mungo's is under attack, or is already theirs.
Right.
And it's like, that is just a punch right in the stomach. Because he was so close, right? I think up until this point, James has been saying what people want to hear, right? Yes, like, I'm going to change. Like, yeah, okay, maybe it wasn't I could have been better.
Yeah.
Whatever. But when he sees Snape, game over. Sorry.
Yeah, he regresses. That Absolutely. Was the idea in Snape and the Marauders.
Like, of course.
He's, you know, I say that he is progressing. Lily's influencing him, and he's becoming a better person. But once Snape shows up, he just kind of clicks
and
into a different person.
Happened again to this degree. Again. And he did grow a little, because he ended up getting the upper hand.
And it's a process. He will keep growing.
Yes.
So, and like all the characters grow. And either they end up on a high note or they end on a low note.
Sure.
And it really depends on what the character is going through. And every character that we figured out, they end on the high note or they end on a low note.
I will say, this has been the hard part.
We'll see how it works out.
This has been the hard part of me co-writing this with you, is that James, the first time I ever met you was me breaking down the role of James.
Yeah.
So he is intrinsically just somebody that I am very much fighting for all the time. And when we write, it's like, I have to really work on taking that hat off.
But I'm giving him the arc he needs to make him that much better of a person.
And I agree with you.
But if I followed with some of the things you want to do,
you gotta give me the benefit of the doubt. It's really hard for me to be like, yeah, why don't you hit James in the face again? He loves it's great. I love that part when you just kick his ass.
It's okay.
But it's fine, because it makes for a better story.
He'll end up fine.
Who knows? Don't spoil a gosh darn thing.
Look, it's obvious that he gets killed by Voldemort at the end of this, so he's fine. He's fine.
Plot armor, baby.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you can't die now. That. You die later.
Yeah, I'm not going to die here. We could totally say that. Write that in.
But yeah, any last thoughts on this episode? Any speculations on your part, Alex, since you don't know what's going on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's going to open at Mungo's or it's going to go some other direction. It's going to go with the order.
Isn't this fun?
The next episode, the one episode, the special one.
Yeah, how are you gonna say that?
That does not help me. There's special stuff that happens in each episode.
No, that's true. All of our babies are special.
Yeah.
Is this the one that is?
I'll say this, that this
is a different style.
Episode 9 is a different style.
Got it.
Episode 8 is Marauders and Order of the Phoenix centric. Very, very much so.
Okay, cool.
And then episode 9 is a very different way of telling a story in general.
Yes.
And has a huge plot twist.
Mm. Yay.
Yay. Episode 8 is basically the end of Act 2.
Yes.
For the story and for James Potter.
We should let Alex know, now that I've ruined everything. What do you think is going to happen next?
Yeah.
He has no idea.
I don't know. I mean, obviously they've taken over St. Mungo's, but like, would this be an opportunity then, I guess, for James to not practice, or to practice not just going in headlong and trying to actually, you know, plot out and strategize in a sense, so that it's not just throwing oneself into the situation just like he does typically.
Right.
All right. If you were a wizard in this, if Alex was a wizard in this situation.
Alex is a wizard.
Well, but this is true.
If he could use literal magic.
No, he can use literal magic.
Yeah.
Look at this.
You can't do a what if. He's already a wizard. Right, he's already making magic.
Let's say your literal magic self existed in this time and given circumstance. What would be your next step?
Well, which character am I?
Yeah, you're yourself. Are you a good guy or a bad guy?
That's the problem. I think actually on Pottermore I'm a Slytherin, so.
Well, what's your next step?
Slytherin. See, everyone thinks that I'm like, you're anti-Marauders. I'm like, no, I'm not anti-Marauders. In fact, I defend Slytherin all the time. It just happens to have
Slytherin
a house
gets a
full
bad rap.
Yeah, Slytherin does get a bad rap.
All right, so your Slytherin-ness, what would you do next?
I don't know. I mean, that's always been my gripe with bad guys, is that they wait too long to get the job done. Like, I would be much more ruthless than most bad guys. Like, I would just go for it. Because if I am a bad guy, like, I wouldn't be talking about stuff.
You're on track with Bellatrix. That's your frustration right now.
I would have just done it already. It would have been done. You would have gotten there and would be dead already. It'd be
done.
It'd be over.
Yeah.
All right. So you guys, you know, you're a bit of
an Anton Dolohov.
Yeah.
You're a Bellatrix.
That is good to know.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't need to, you know. Would they say, like, the best revenge is success? So it's like, let the success speak for itself. So in this case, let the whatever they're doing just speak for itself.
So, okay, gotcha. So you're a Death Eater. You have St. Mungo's. How do you feel?
Well, obviously, the only thing, I don't know plot-wise why they are necessarily there, per se.
Well, Snape did say he's got all the beakers and cauldrons he needs.
True.
And they've been gathering stuff the whole time.
I would make the thing that they need to make. Yeah, that would be probably my next first best step. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I guess the thing I'm curious is, obviously, are they taking people there hostage? Obviously, that would make some level of sense, right?
Sure.
For security purposes, even though they are powerful. Obviously, they didn't like just straight up win this last battle per se. It was once again somewhat of a stalemate at best. So yeah, I mean, obviously, you'd probably have to take hostages to some extent. Now I'm like pontificating, like if I were Alan Rickman in Die Hard, like how would I go about?
That's awesome.
This is
full circle.
Wow, we really changed the image of Alexander.
you put the CEO of the company you're holding hostage in front of a chair and just shoot him in the head.
And I just slowly start growing a goatee, come out of a truck
with no ambulance.
Are you a cowboy, Mr. McLean? Oh man. Great. I love that you're a Death
Eater.
So in your mind, Death Eaters are going to hold on to what they've got and forward their plan. That's double down. It's a good next step. We'll see what happens.
Yep.
If only I could remember what we wrote.
Yep. All right, guys. We will see you with episode 8, which is in Jordan's hands right now.
Yes. Ooh. Also, give a shout out of where people can find your stuff and see what you're up to, handles and all the stuff, because you not only do you score movies, but you also write your own songs and produce your own music. So tell the fine folks in the internet where they can get at you.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram @AlexanderArntzen, A-R-N-T. Stzen. That's the easiest one. That's the one that's like just my namesake. But
it's also got a lot of his working out on there. So if you want to get motivated,
it did. Check now, out the Instagram. It's a little more film score. Yeah, I try to make it a little more professional.
Fair enough.
But and then on SoundCloud / Alexander Arntzen. And then my songwriting name is Apollo Mason. So you can find my songs by searching Apollo Mason. On all the, you know, iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify.
I
gotta have
a stage name now. I want a stage name.
Well, you also got to put a link in the description of this video to the rap song that Paul and Alex did together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Mischief Managed.
It's not Mischief. It's you guys did something else later, right?
Yes, yes.
You guys have done a lot of cool stuff. Paul Stanko, who plays Remus Lupin, and you made some killer music.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. There's another song. Yeah,
Alex
that we did together. Never,
should not stop doing that. He needs to keep doing it because he's fantastic.
Paul just needs to keep doing everything that he's doing. Yeah. He's doing a great job.
I mean,
job.
he's still in stage and he's amazing.
Paul,
we need to keep
doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
This episode with Alex as our guest is about Paul Stanko.
It's mostly
keep
about
doing
Paul
what
Stanko.
You're doing.
Yep.
But it doesn't have an Instagram account, Sweet Paul Stanko, that actually isn't really there too, which I always tag him anyway. But even though I literally know it's not going to do anything.
It's not him.
Yeah.
Well, I will say something that's just been so great is that the amount of everybody who's worked on this project is so passionate and just so full of creative joy. And it is such a pleasure having you as a part of this, man, and just getting to know you through this whole process.
Hell yeah.
It's just been great. And both of you guys, hats off to just how wonderful you've been doing.
To you.
Yeah. So, and thanks for watching and keeping up. And oh, we have so much more to come. So like and share.
This is where it's gonna start to get heavy.
Yeah, keep your notifications on because it's gonna get wild.
Yeah, we were going through all the stuff, and I was just like, hey guys, look, I know y'all are heavy duty Potterheads, and what the stuff we are doing is really taking. It's not taking risks, but we're making sure that it's heavy enough but doesn't break anything.
We try not to break anything.
If you catch something that's questionable, talk to us. And there were a couple times where that happened. They're like, does this happen with this? And we're like, yes. We just need to do a minor rewrite. Okay, we're good. Okay,
oh, man.
Cool.
There's been a couple times. There's been a couple times, and we're supposed to end the episode again. This is like 2 years long. There's been a couple times during recording that actors have come up and been like, oh, is this thing? And I'm like, yeah, it's that. Hold on. And then I just sit and Google and research, and we call her like Harry Potter expert, and she's like, uh-huh. And I'm like, okay. And then I hang up. And I'm like, yeah. Obviously, it works that way.
Totally. That's like exactly how we intended it.
That we almost had doctors in St. Mungo's. We were recording doctors in St. Mungo's.
It was healers.
And then I was like, oh, doctors don't exist in the Harry Potter universe except for to be ridiculed by wizards. Right. So we had to rewrite all of the first like 4 episodes.
we changed to healers and it was fine. So
yeah, but that's the kind of work that we do every single day to make sure that this is up to the standards of the original work, because we care a lot about it and we care a lot about you guys. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to get heavy soon.
It's going to get heavy.
So, episode 8 is in Jordan's hands. It's going to take a few weeks for him to finish it up. And then it goes to this guy for scoring. It's a lot less dense this time. So, hopefully, we should be able to...
Will the storm be arriving, starting with episode 8? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. The storm will arrive.
Yeah. We're in the middle of the storm. Yeah. It's just building.
The storm has happened.
It's building. Yeah. We're it's category 2 right now, but it'll keep building to a category 5.
Oh, mate. Yep. I'm so excited.
But thanks, guys, for watching, and we'll catch you soon.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye.